This episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast is brought to you by Studio Headphones. Epic Film Guys listeners can get 15% off a pair of Studio Headphones by using the code EPICFILMGUYS over on their website. Check the link down in the show notes. The Regent 2 model that they sent me is absolutely amazing. The battery life is crazy. 24 plus hours, connects to any device that uses Bluetooth, and the depth of sound quality that these things have, I've talked about it on the show before, it's absolutely amazing. Studio's modern Scandinavian headphones not only have the sound quality, but they are also incredibly stylish. You can get black or white marble designs. They're incredible headphones, and I can't say enough good things about them. So please, again, Epic Film Guys, use the discount code, get 15% off of a pair of headphones over at studio.com. I think our peak vulgarity was when the Hobster talked about cutting off and eating a piece of his own dick. Gentlemen, welcome to a brand new Monday episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. I am Nick. I am not joined by Justin.
He said that he sucked the blood from the penis and put the balls in his mouth.
He will be here, I think, maybe. I don't know. It hasn't happened yet. But he was really, really excited to talk about it because the bat suit for Robert Pattinson's Batman and Matt Reeves' The Batman has been revealed-ish. And I don't know if his erection, I think he should see a doctor because his erection has probably lasted for way longer than 4 hours at this point. So second segment of the show, we recorded the review, an Epic Previews review of Spiral from the Book of Saw, or a Saw story as Justin kept calling it. So we got a trailer reaction for that in Epic Previews, and we may hear from Justin to talk about the Batman suit thing. I haven't even watched it. I've just seen the pictures everywhere. Because I'm just like, it's a bat suit and it means nothing to me. I'm just like, okay, it looks fine. Whatever. If the movie doesn't come out for like 16 fucking months, people. Calm down. But one of the things that I decided to do this year proactively is record anniversary shows. Depending on where our schedule falls, like they can be Monday episodes. They might be Patreon-only episodes. They might be whatever. But a lot of films are celebrating anniversaries here in 2020, including the film that I'm going to be talking about tonight. And I've invited a very, very special guest onto the show. He has been here before. Which one of the retrospectives did you join me for? Was it 2018? I can't remember.
Napoleon Dynamite.
That's right. You were on for the Napoleon Dynamite Megasode, which is absolutely
the
amazing. We have Brad from, not only from the Cinema Guys, but from I'll Get a Burger, which if you listen to the show, you've heard me talk about over the past couple of weeks. Congratulations to both you and your wife, Kara, on all of your recent success with doing Whole 30. You dropped 25 pounds?
25 pounds, that's correct.
Man, and he is going to get up at the ass crack of dawn tomorrow as of recording day and go run a 5K.
Do a 5K in 18-degree weather.
And this is the last time you're ever going to hear from Brad, so we will...
This is my last recording ever.
Say our goodbyes. We will say our goodbyes now. But Brad, thank you very, very much for joining me. It's a thrill to have you back on the Epic Film Guys, man.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to come back on and talk some scruffy voice Vin Diesel.
That's a lot of cum.
Yeah. Loy Sauce is here in spirit. You know how it is. But yeah, so we are going to talk about Pitch Black, which celebrates its 20th anniversary. And like I said, this is one of those things that I really proactively wanted to do because we missed an episode. We completely just didn't even publish anything for like a week and a half, which has never happened in the 5-year history of the Epic Film Guys. And it made me feel so fucking weird that I'm like, I need to bank so much backup audio that it never happens again. So that's basically the genesis of why I'm like actively pursuing this. But I had never seen this movie before. So are you, A, are you a fan of this movie? B, is this a movie that you've seen before? If not a fan, obviously, is it a movie you've seen before? You saw it once and remember it fondly? Don't remember it fondly? Where do you fall with Pitch Black?
I saw it in the theater when it was released, and was immediately a big fan of it back in 2000. And I had watched it a few times, you know, after DVD release and such. And I hadn't watched it in quite a few years until I rewatched it for this. But I can't believe it's been 20 years. And my rewatch thoughts are a little bit different than I remember the movie being.
Directed by David Twohy? Twohy?
I don't know how to say his
name. Twohy?
Twohy? Twohy? Yeah.
He directed the... Oh, he wrote The Fugitive. Okay, so I'm looking him up right now. He wrote Riddick, and he wrote G.I. Jane as well. So he's definitely much more of a writer.
Yes.
But he has been... So the Pitch Black is the first in a series of Riddick movies, like the Chronicles of Riddick series. How many movies are there now?
There are three, and they're getting ready to start production on the fourth.
Holy shit. So yeah, there's this movie, and then the Chronicles of Riddick in 2004, and then Riddick in 2013. So yeah, this is, and he has directed all of them. Directed all of them. So this is kind of his, baby. So, I want to get this out of the way now, so that way we can get into a discussion about this movie. Okay.
Shut up! Shut up!
I knew it was coming.
No!
Wrong!
Now shut the fuck up and let me do my job.
Now, I play that rant sound drop, Brad, with a little bit of a caveat, because I can completely understand, like, when I sit down and I watch this movie, if I put myself in a very, very early 2000s mindset, like, this obviously has very, very 90s-ish CGI, because that's obviously when it would have been mostly produced. It came out in February of 2000, so obviously this movie was made largely completed production, everything in the 90s. So, I mean... I can understand if you're somebody who's in an audience sitting down to watch this movie in the 90s, I can understand why you would sit down and watch this movie and enjoy it then. This is not a movie. This is one of those movies that is completely of its time, and that's it. Like, if you watch it removed from that time, holy fuck, this movie's bad. It's bad, bad. It's so... Vin Diesel is the best actor and gives the best performance in the movie. That's how bad it is. Everybody else is more stale than Vin Diesel in this movie, but...
And this is before we really knew who Vin Diesel was.
Yeah, he was like... This was like 2 years removed from when he was a random dude in Saving Private Ryan. Yeah. You know, I mean, so we didn't really know, like, this was, you know, we didn't have all the Fast and Furious stuff to reflect back on for this. I mean, conceptually, I'll give it this. Conceptually, I don't think the movie's bad. I don't think it's a bad idea for a movie. Like, it's a commercial transport ship. They crash land on this planet, and these creatures that only come out at night live on the planet, and, you know, they have to try to survive when inevitably... The three suns are blocked out or a set or whatever the
they have an eclipse when there are three suns. Yeah.
Which like, how the fuck does the planet block out all three suns when the other sun is clearly like across, like they do many shots of the other sun on the other horizon. Like, so they're clearly like in opposite points in space. Like, for, can we talk? I'm going to pitch this over to you. I'm going to let you talk about it for a minute. Can you please, because you watched this movie when it first came out, can you please explain to me who in the fuck just fell in the editing room, who fell on the hue knob and just like, oh shit, and then they just left it in the movie and they decided to write a plot point in that, oh, that sun's red and that sun's blue, so holy fuck, the hue, like, it hurts your eyes. It's so tinted.
Yeah, and completely washed out. Like, they try to overexpose everything to make you think, like, hey, it's really sunny here. Just so you guys know, like, it's really sunny.
Like, why?
But, seeing it in the theater in 2000, you know, early 2000, like, it was one of those like an indie sci-fi horror movie that comes out. You know, I'm a fan of horror. I love sci-fi. So I was like,
yeah, it's always just like it's fun. Always nice to see somebody taking a chance with a sci-fi property. Yeah. This isn't the worst sci-fi thing I've ever seen. I'll definitely give it that. It's definitely not the worst sci-fi thing I've ever seen. So I want to talk more about that before I shit on this movie a lot more. I want to talk more about that, especially because you did see this movie in the theater and you said yes. You came out of it and you enjoyed it. So if you can step back into 20 years ago, Brad's shoes.
Yes.
Tell me what it was about this movie, because you said you've rewatched it a few times as well. Why did you gravitate toward it?
I think I liked the concept of these creatures that came out at night. Like, that was the biggest draw to me is when it, you know, halfway through the movie, when it goes, as the title says, pitch black, and these creatures come out, that really grabbed me in a lot of the, you know, keeping these creatures in the dark. I love when things are just not always in your face, you know, keep it off to the side. And to me, it's a little more of a scare tactic type of thing. And it, for that time, for me, it just worked.
This is and pretty much the we worst didn't know video who Vin Diesel made.
Was. So I was like, oh, this.
He's not bad new, in this.
Action star giving us these scruffy one-liners like, oh, this guy could be someone.
He definitely has that kind of gruff, generic action star kind of sensibility to him in the film. He's definitely not flexing a lot of acting chops or anything, but he's at least effective in his performance. I actually kind of enjoy Vin Diesel in this role. I don't think he's bad in it by any means, because he's not doing any kind of heavy lifting.
It's Vin Diesel after, you know, 20 years now of seeing Vin Diesel in Fast and the Furious, Triple X, all of those, like, this is who he is and this is how he's always been. And
you know what? There's a market for that. So I don't want to knock that kind of thing. But I like Diesel in the film. I don't think Diesel is bad in the film, but why in the sweet, merciful fuck is everyone else so bad?
Why are all their line deliveries? It's not like you had bad actors in it either.
No. Like, Rhonda Mitchell is a great actress. I've absolutely loved her in a lot of different things. Keith David, you have in this movie, and he can't stop like praising Allah accent. For like 5 seconds. You can tell this is a pre-9/11 movie.
Oh yeah,
because everybody watching this movie would have been like, oh my god, like, you know, she was in the Silent Hill movie. She's been in a lot of other different movies. You know, she's a good actress. I really, really enjoy Rhonda Mitchell. Mm-hmm. Keith David, you got Cole Hauser in this movie. Not like you're not like running the A-list of A-lists.
No, but I mean they're decent actors.
Yeah.
That if you watch this movie, you're like, oh, I know who that is.
Yeah, like you it's those kind of actors that, oh, I've seen them in a bunch of stuff.
Like, you know, Claudia Black, people would know her from Farscape at that time. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, she's in this, and it's
a
completely different role.
It's just like they're just not like they're just not good. Like, they just I don't know if they just didn't get enough takes. Like, you know, if it was this was kind of like Star Wars, like George Lucas syndrome, like they did one take and he was like, okay, good, on to the next scene or something. And like that.
I think at that time, I mean, I don't remember his filmography, but I think he hasn't done a lot of films, mostly the Riddick movies. So it's maybe. It's
yeah, I just did look at his filmography. That is literally half of his filmography.
Yeah.
And Pitch Black was early in that one. But like I said, he's a writer on The Fugitive. I love The Fugitive. Oh, my God. No, he wrote he wrote Waterworld. Oh, God.
That explains it for you. This
review is over, ladies and gentlemen. All right. So performances in this film, I utterly detested, except for, ironically, Vin Diesel, who I don't like. So that was really, really interesting to me. You have to forgive 1990 CGI. You have to.
Yeah.
Because it is that late 90s CGI where it is so ridiculous and the actors are reacting to it wrongly because they're like putting what, like tennis balls on sticks at this point. Like, we're not living in the mocap world of today. you know, where we have Andy Serkis as one of these creatures, like running around and jumping on stuff.
I mean, this movie did come out after, say, like episode one, to where you, although it has aged since then, but at that time you saw Jar Jar and those creatures.
At least you don't have to see a lot of shots of these creatures in the daylight. Like, you know what? Yeah. Kudos to the production for the genius idea of having CGI creatures that only can live at night. Because holy fuck, would these look terrible in the daytime.
Well, and you can tell in some scenes that they use practical creatures, but they probably didn't have the budget to or be able to work a full one and trying to make them, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these creatures. So they had to, like, how can we do this?
Yeah, it looks like a weird, like, let's CGI just make him gray ink blob and sometimes, like, moving around. It's really weird. Like, the creature vision is really weird. Like, it looks like TV static that you can barely see a face through. And, like, I don't know why. Like, why do you not, if you're a creative team, why do you not just have them use, like, echolocation, like bats or something? Why do you not just make them, like, use sound? And then, like, the whole movie, like, halfway through the movie, like, you know, all they're doing is making noise when these creatures are around, and I'm like, shut the fuck up. Because I'm just thinking, as an audience member, I'm like, these creatures, because they can't see, they have to have, like, all this sensitive light, like, sound, whatever. But no, they can see. It just looks like they're watching, like, one of the old staticky porn channels from the 90s. Yeah. Like, you might see a little wiggle of a face. I think I saw a titty. There's definitely a titty. That's their vision. That's what they see.
Yes. And then, unless you're really close to them, like the one scene where Vin Diesel gets really close to the monster's face, then he can't see him.
Yeah, then they have a blind spot. Like, and I love that. I love how he deduces that by just randomly holding up a bone. Like, can we?
I agree. I don't know why they don't use echolocation and why it was.
Yeah, that made so much more sense to me. It's like, you know, this would have been way more thrilling. Like, if you think about, and granted, we're Monday morning quarterbacking this a little bit, but you think about the concept of a film like The Quiet Place. Like, imagine if you had to make a silent trek carrying these power cells that they have to carry, which are as heavy as the plot requires them to be. When they first get back to the ship to get the power cells, Vin Diesel comes out carrying two of them on his shoulders, and two other people bring out one carrying it like it's really heavy. But then later on in the movie, you have Vin Diesel with all of them chained to him, and he's dragging them.
And he's struggling, like, slowly running with them. Oh, my
God. But, like, imagine, like, the second half of this movie, like, once the eclipse happens or whatever, imagine the second half of this movie where they have to be intensely quiet, sneaking across the landscape, like, to not alert these creatures. Like, that could have been some really tense, pulse-pounding stuff. Instead, we get what I text-messaged one of my friends when I was watching this. I was like, holy fuck, this movie is bioluminescent bugs ex machina. First of all, spoilers for a movie that's
20 years old.
Nope, it doesn't matter. We have to do it.
Build that wall.
There he is.
Build that wall.
He's got out
build
his little trowel. Wall. He's build cementing that wall. That fucking wall. But, you know, so if you haven't seen this movie, whatever. I don't care. I just wanted to play the Trump sound drop because it always makes Loy Sauce do like a kind of phase. I made a sourpuss audio. I always... 5 fucking years and I can't, like, get that, you know, mental thing, be like, Nick, it's an audio format.
It's okay. It's okay.
That's not going to turn your camera off so I can't see you. There we go. But I've been drinking, people. They have a couple of flashlights and stuff. Vin Diesel has this bandolier with, like, a bunch of flashlights and shit on it. But then the rest of the team... These creatures are almost, you know, like, really phobic against light. Like, light can hurt them. Like, if they get hit with any kind of light, it hurts them.
Yeah, they burn kind of like a vampire in the sun.
Yeah, exactly. Like, almost a vampiric kind of thing. So what they decide to do is they decide to take all these liquor bottles because one of the crew members stashed away all sorts of liquor, but nobody has any water. There is no water on this ship, but literally a fucking treasure trove of alcohol.
Yes.
why the fuck not? Because we have to make it a plot point in the first act that they have to find water on this desert planet with three suns, where basically the sun has a blue piece of cellophane over it. Holy fuck. I can't, like, the second half of this movie is far better than the first half, because at least you don't have to fucking look at this thing. You're exactly right when you say that it's, like, really overexposed. Like, it's so,
oh, yeah,
so bright and blue, and then it's so bright and red, and then it goes back to being so bright and blue again.
And then they do, like, this kind of, like, they squish it and wave it around when it's some sort of supposed to be a trippy scene.
So yeah, so they decide to make makeshift, like, tiki torches, and, like, have these big fucking long, like, fuses and the liquor bottles that are burning. That amount of light that will throw off would deter absolutely nothing ever.
Nothing.
Literally fucking nothing. Like, why couldn't they have, like, a big fucking, I mean, okay, you've decided, as a director, a creative team, production design standpoint, we're going with their allergic to light kind of thing, like vampires, mm-hmm. like you said. Why do you not have them have, like, one big fuck light, and then it goes out a couple of times? Like, the most that they have is they have this weird generator thing, and they all have, like, fucking glow stick hoses wrapped around each other, which yeah. give off almost no light. Literally almost, these would not deter anything.
Well, and the creatures start out as, like, a almost like this glowing larva.
Yeah.
That they pick out of the ground and put in the jars, and then
that's why I was like, and then, yeah, so when they run out of fuel in their whiskey bottles and stuff, they run out of alcohol, and they can't, so then all of a sudden they're like, oh my god, look at all these magical bioluminescent bugs that we have here, and then they cram a whole bunch of them into a fucking whiskey bottle, and it has this very pale blue glow to it. Again, not enough light to do anything, ever, literally ever.
But enough to keep these creatures away. That these glowing things eventually become, apparently.
Because they see in 90s porn vision, yes. Sure. You know, like,
I would like to see the vision, really, what they see when that bottle goes across. I don't really think they show you.
That's when you see the titty.
Washing them out.
That's when you see the titty. It's like you almost think you get, like, a little bit of nipple on the bottom left-hand corner of the screen, and then static. And then you're like, fuck.
And then Vin Diesel has his own kind of vision.
Yeah, which is, do you think it's better or worse than the creature vision?
Well, it's a little more colorful. I would almost say better, because, you know, you at least have some color in there. So it looks like static.
If you think about, go back in your heads, older listeners, you younger 20-something listeners, just sit quietly for a moment. But you older listeners, that you're, like, you know, your mid to late 30s, like me, like Brad, like, seriously, PlayStation 1 cutscene level graphics. Like, when Vin Diesel has his Riddick eyes going because he got his eyeballs shined in prison. Like, what?
Yes.
What?
So he could see in the dark.
Oh my god, like, why can't he just have been, like, a fucking mutant or something? Why couldn't this have been like an X-Men thing or something? Whatever. But anyway,
he was in solitary, I think it was, he got it so he could see.
He's in solitary confinement, like, and he paid the cool price of 20 menthol cigarettes, cools, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, took, in order to get his eyeballs shined. I mean, I don't know what cigarettes went for back in 2000 in prison currency wise, but I mean, I have to imagine that was probably a pretty good deal.
Pretty high, yeah.
But yeah, so it legitimately
looked like a cat, or every once in a while.
Everything is glowing like this weird purpley pixelated kind of color, and everything looks even more cartoonish when it's moving around in it, but it's supposed to be his night vision.
Yeah.
Like, this movie is 20 years old, ladies and gentlemen, and I can imagine, like I said, I can put myself in that place. I can put myself in Brad's shoes when he saw the movie back in the day, because this is a fun kind of trashy B sci-fi movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That, you know, if you don't think too hard about it, it's fun and it's interesting. But this is one of those movies that would have even, like, even once you get to like 2002, like once the Lord of the Rings movies start coming out with like the CGI that they were doing and other things around the early 2000s, this movie would have been just snap dated like nothing, like instantly dated.
Just like when I just rewatched it this week, like it'd been quite a few years since I watched it, and I was like, ooh, this is definitely dated.
Yeah,
so it hasn't aged well.
I guarantee you, people that love this movie or anybody that enjoys this movie, and if you're one of them, please let us know over on social media at Epic Film Guys. But if you're one of those people that loves this movie, I guarantee you, you saw this back in the 90s and it just holds a nostalgic place in your heart. The same reason why most people love 80s movies that are also fucking garbage. I mean,
it doesn't hold up, but there still is that part of me that does remember how much I enjoyed it in the theater. And, you know, I love the Fast and the Furious movies, and I love how ridiculous Vin Diesel can be with the one-liners and such. So you still watch it, and you can have fun with it.
Yeah. You know what the worst part about this movie was to me, though? It's the quick cuts. The quick cut editing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are a number of different scenes where, like, literally, like, that's how they're trying to convey panic, and that's how they're trying to convey like this monster attack or whatever else. And it is just like, it's just craziness. Like, stop. Like, I know you don't want us to see what the monster is. Like, when there's an early scene where one guy crawls into this cave thing or whatever, and the creatures attack him, and he gets like dragged inside by the creatures, but it cuts so many fucking times.
And it's usually a lot of that cut in close.
Yeah.
So we can get really close so you don't see what's going on.
They're using a handheld camera, so the camera's fucking swinging all over the place. Like, the cameraman's having a fucking seizure the whole time. So even like in the quarter second cuts that you're getting, the camera is wildly swinging in every direction possible.
Like a Paul Greengrass Bourne movie.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh God, like it kind of just takes all the bad ideas and all the bad things about just bad B movies, I guess. When I think about bad B movies, like the action scenes are so terrible. Like, say if a character like attacks a character or like flips a character over somebody else, there's like six cuts before that person hits the ground. Like, they pick them up, and then there's one cut, and then there's another cut, and then there's another cut. And I just came out of seeing Birds of Prey, you know, which we reviewed on the show on Thursday, and like the action in that, like, there are long takes. Like, say what you will about that movie, and I know some people aren't fans of it, even though they should be, but
it's a good one.
The action in that movie is like, there are long takes or well choreographed action sequences where you get to see long takes and long sequences.
I'm trying to remember it, because after this, Vin Diesel's character was originally supposed to die in the movie. He was supposed to die at the end.
Was he?
And they rewrote it and changed it because, you know, they were like, oh, franchise. This could be a franchise. Make some Riddick movies. And then the next movie after that was more of like this much bigger budget action movie with trying to be a big epic. You know, the Chronicles of Riddick. And then they tried to kind of go back to how the first one was, where they were like, okay, we're going to try to make it a little smaller for Riddick. And they kind of changed from what this original sci-fi horror movie is to this more of a sci-fi action from there. I'm curious what they're going to do with the fourth one.
Is this a better film, would you say, than the second and the third installments, or did they are they too different to judge them that way, or
they're all different? I mean, obviously Vin Diesel is still the same. He's going to give his one-liners. He's going to grumble and growl.
You can never go into a Vin Diesel film expecting some any range, never. Never.
Probably going to be something about family in it, and you know,
the second one
has Judi Dench in it, which I was surprised to see her in a film like this.
Judi Dench likes getting paid.
It's true.
She got fucking paid the mortgage somehow. Shit.
because of my, as much as I loved Pitch Black when Chronicles of Riddick came out, I was super excited for it because I was like, oh, I loved, you know, that little sci-fi movie, and hoping they kind of I wanted to see them expand the universe, which that's what they do in these next two, but they just try to get, you could tell the budget's going up and they're just trying to do more, and it doesn't always work.
I am almost intrigued enough to maybe think about wanting to watch the second and third movies in this series. Which, I mean, there are things that I'm excited to watch that I can't ever get around to seeing. So we know what that means for their chances on my watch list. But
second one, you get Carl Urbane also in it.
So we get Vin Diesel, who is a very flat, monotone action star. And then we add in Carl Urban, who is also a very flat, monotone action star.
And you pit them against each other? I think I sold it, didn't I?
Dread 3D sucks, and I'll tell everybody that fucking asks. Nobody asked, but I felt like saying it just to piss. Paul's listening to this right now, and now he just got mad. He's like, fuck you. Wait.
How dare you?
There he is. So, I mean, yeah, 20 years of Pitch Black. I mean, you know what? I mean, kudos that they keep making money, so they keep churning out more movies in the franchise, and which I guess is good enough. I mean, as a sci-fi property, as an idea, like just as an idea, like the fact that he can see in the dark and like the different kind of things that you could do with that aesthetic, I think are interesting. Like, I think there's an interesting premise here, and I think there's fertile ground here to explore. Mm-hmm. I just think that this movie is just executed like it feels like it was almost kind of a rushed production, if you know what I mean. Like, they really only had, say, 20 days or something like that to shoot this thing. So they had to cram in all these sequences, and like everything got like a take or two, and nobody really got the chance to kind of settle into their characters. Cole Hauser particularly is terrible in this film. Horrible performance. I hate his performance in this movie.
And the thing is, like we said, they're not A-list actors, no. But they're not bad actors.
No, yeah, they're not bad actors. But I mean, you think about, you know, I mean, if you give them a few more takes, like you let them settle into their characters, Everything feels stiff and everything feels kind of mechanical. I think from a script perspective, from a dialogue perspective, nothing feels natural, I guess, if that makes sense. Like, and then there are just lines that, like, there's literally one shot when they're like all in the desert, like it's early in the film, I think toward the end of the first act or beginning of the second act, where all of the characters that are alive, they literally move the camera down each one of them, and every single one of them spits out some kind of one-liner, and it's just like, holy Jesus sweet Christ.
Is that late 90s, early 2000s? I mean, I think it had a 20 million ish budget to it. And it didn't make a ton of money. I think it made close to 40 here in the United States.
Probably just barely broke even or something.
Which are like, you know what? Let's make another one. We'll give them even more money and we'll see where it goes.
I would imagine probably because, Chronicles of Riddick didn't come out for a few years after this.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing maybe after Pitch Black, when did the Fast and the Furious, the first Fast and the Furious movie come out?
2001.
So that's why.
Shortly after.
That's why you all of a sudden Vin Diesel's way more marketable.
Yeah, because he had Fast and the Furious, then he had Triple X, and then
So this was those were both after Pitch Black. So then you, as David Twahi, are able to go to the studio and be like, Vin Diesel's a way bigger star now. All of a sudden, so we can get a much bigger budget and probably get a much better box office turnaround. Because
give me money. People come for him now.
Exactly.
It's not just...
Because, he was nobody when this movie first came out. But, you know, once you get Fast and Furious and you get Triple X in there, I can definitely see... Like I said, I think it's conceptually interesting. And I think for B-movie, sci-fi, horror kind of stuff, it's okay. Like, it's passably watchable, but not fully.
I watch movies that are far worse than this on a regular basis. So.
Whew. You are on the Epic Film Guys, sir. That is our bread and butter. Is what we do
for a living.
But so
I mean,
let me ask you a question. So rating wise, 20 years ago, Brad walks out of that theater. What kind of rating does 20 years ago Brad stamp on this thing? If you had to, because I don't know if you did or not, but what do you think you would have rated it back in the day? And then now, what do you think you would rate the movie?
Back then, I probably would have walked out and probably gave it a solid 7 out of 10. Because I really enjoyed it, and it's one of those, like, I will watch this again, which I did. You know, I purchased it. I own it. After rewatch again this week, I'd probably go a 5. It's one of those that, yeah, I could, if it's on, I'll watch it, but didn't quite hold up to what I remembered.
Daddy's going to spank you with the belt now.
That's, see... Justin always has to chastise his son, you know, when he steals his ratings. But that's also, I would also give it a 5. I would, it's just below the passing line to me. It didn't hold my attention enough. I was constantly distracted by literally anything around me. Like, I literally looked over, like, at my floor to the left of me for a couple of minutes for whatever reason. Because this movie is just like, there's just these long sequences of all these cannon fodder characters that you just don't care about. That are in the script because they have a unique accent. I'm pretty sure they just were like, we need an Australian. We need a British guy. We need some Muslims. We need, like, all these different characters.
Keith,
like,
David, what can you give us?
Yeah.
You're in the thing. You can do some stuff, right?
And then they have Keith David in the movie. To like, Keith David, see, that's where it is. Keith David, you're coming out of the 90s. Keith David is like your action cred. And then they have him playing an imam, and he's just praising Allah the whole time in the movie.
Looking for water, I mean, it's fine.
Like, I've not done nothing against their religion or anything, but like, he doesn't do anything. Like, that's all he does in the movie is he's just like praising Allah for everything. It's like, okay, good. You know, I mean, I guess he discovers the water machine. Somehow he knows it's a water machine, and then it pumps out like this sludge-looking stuff. It looks like, it doesn't look like fucking corn syrup. Like, it's syrupy at first.
Yeah.
I'm like, who's drinking that? I mean, I know you're on like this desert world with three suns that color the sky different colors when they come out. But does that mean if they're both out at the same time, it's purple? We didn't ever get to see purple.
It never went that.
Oh.
Yeah, I think the purple color was in his vision, so they. They used it there.
That's true. You were like, well, we can't use the purple here, even though there's like one fisheye shot of like, you know, the red sun is over on the left side of the screen and the blue sun is over on the right side of the screen. It's like, but why isn't it like purple in the middle? So, yeah, once they get indoors and once it gets dark out and there's just more natural like skin tones and lighting, like, holy fuck, everything is so red and so blue. And fucking movie.
Yeah, and they saved the extreme blue for the end when they got the glowing slugs and the tube lights.
Yeah, the bioluminescent bugs.
They had to pick their colors depending on what minute of the movie they're in.
Like, oh, just fucking... Five out of ten. I probably will
watch it again. It'll probably be some sort of, like, you know, the late night movie
watch type of pile of shit.
Where you can just throw it on and... You don't have to really pay attention.
No, I would not.
Well, no. I own it, so it could come out at any time.
There you go. That's what you get. God damn it. Colby saved you. So
Colby.
There you go. But so Brad, number one, thank you very much for joining me.
I know that
you've got to get up early and put on 17 layers to go run this fucking frigid-ass 4K that you've got to run. And I don't want to keep you too much longer because I know you've got to get some sleep so that way you're nice and rested. But first of all, as I said earlier, congratulations both you and your wife, Kara, on all of your success with Whole 30, with all the weight loss and everything. You guys are fucking killing it. Please keep going because, I mean, if you guys, especially if you just, I love the idea, I should say, of just doing a podcast, you and your wife doing a podcast together to hold yourselves accountable, you know, hold yourselves accountable to the audience out there, whoever may be listening, to say, hey, I've got to go on a business trip. I've got to do this. I've got to fucking try to find Whole 30 compliant foods doing this and doing this and doing this and doing this, which I can imagine must be really fucking tough.
And it was one of those that we did it. We didn't do it to get a whole bunch of people to listen. We did it to keep ourselves accountable, knowing we have to talk about it every week.
Yes.
So no matter who's listening, who's not, we have to talk about it in front of each other. And it's still one of those when it comes out of your mouth and it kind of hits you a little bit like, oh, crap.
Yeah. And it kind of is one of those things where it keeps you honest when you talk back and forth to each other.
Absolutely
about, I had this craving, I had this craving, I had this craving. And I also love that you guys talk about the recipes and stuff that you're making as well. And not only talking about the recipes, but talking about the recipe failures that you've had along the way.
Like, had a couple.
Oh, God, this was terrible. Never make this. This was just unbelievably horrible. But then also the recipe successes as well. Whole 30 compliant recipes that you guys made that you actually really, really took a shine to and really enjoyed. So I don't want to just talk about I'll Get a Burger, even though I think everybody should check it out and just continue to follow you guys in your journey.
Get a Burger.
Yeah.
We decided on that one because that's always my response to her whenever she was always, what do you want for dinner? How about this? How about that? And I'll be like, how about burgers?
See,
so that's kind of where the name came from.
You're a man after my own heart, sir. Or you're a man after Nick, like 7 months ago's heart. Like, now Nick would be like, all right, I guess I can have one small one and fit that into my daily calories.
I could smell it.
Yeah. But you've also helped out with Livestream for the Cure in the past. You're also going to be back this year for Livestream for the Cure 4, which is going to be amazing. We're going for our biggest goal yet, $10,000. But you also are the host of The Cinema Guys. So take a moment. Tell us what The Cinema Guys is all about.
Well, The Cinema Guys, we are just three friends that... Justin and I are here in Ohio, and the Cinema Maiden, she lives in South Korea now. But we
he sucked the blood from the penis and put the balls in his mouth.
No, wrong Justin. Wrong Justin.
Wrong Justin. But we just talk movies. We watch movies and just have fun as friends and just talk about it. Yeah, we love doing lists and just chatting movies.
Shows that do lists suck.
But you can find us at wearethecinemaguys.com.
Yeah, you guys, you do a wonderful movie show, and like I said, I've really taken a shine to I'll Just Get a Burger because it's great.
You know, it's
really great, and it's really great to hear you guys keep yourselves accountable, and especially being on this kind of fitness journey that I'm on, and I know Justin on the fitness journey that he's on. It's really great to hear other people that are, you know, I mean, everybody, especially if they're trying to achieve some kind of health and fitness goal, it's always a struggle. Like, it's such a battle. Every day you see something that you're like, I want to eat that.
And when you started the EFG fitness challenge, like, it was awesome getting on there and just seeing like, okay, like, not everybody is succeeding like awesome every day. Like, everybody has off days.
Exactly.
You know, there's days like,
beat yourself up. You can't be hard on yourself you know, you've got to realize that you're human and that you're going to slip. But like we talked about a little bit before we recorded, if you have one bad day, it's not going to undo a month's worth of great success. If you continue, if you let that bad day then be your springboard into a whole fucking month of bad days, like, well, I ate one candy bar, I might as well just go buy a whole fucking bag of candy and eat that now. You know, if you slip into that kind of a trap, then yes, obviously it can lead to that. But, you know, if you recognize it, okay, I had that day and that was it. That's done. That's good. That's gone.
Let's get back on track and move on.
Exactly. So I'm super proud of you and Kara.
Thank you.
Great job. You guys are doing amazing. Good luck with your race tomorrow. Hopefully you'll report back into us alive.
I'll let you know how frozen we are.
Yeah.
You can follow us online. I'll Get a Burger. We plan on posting some stuff during our 5K tomorrow.
So. During it? Your fingers are going to be way too fucking cold for that. You're not even touching that phone.
Kara wants to do a live Instagram, and I'm like, all right. As we're just going to be shaking.
Did she build a harness to hold her phone in front of her as she moves? Because she's going to hold it out here like this, like in front of her. Even if she's got gloves and then mittens and then like a sweater over that, she's going to be like, fuck this. No, this is the worst idea I've ever had.
Pretty much. But thank you again for having me on.
Thank you for stopping by.
And we're really excited for Livestream for the Cure. Like, we had so much fun last year.
I can't wait for Livestream for the Cure this year. I can't wait to have you back. And not only are you running this 5K, you said you're going to be doing one a month.
One a month is our goal.
The Big Pig or the Pig something, or whatever.
Flying Pig in Cincinnati. It's a marathon. We're going to try to run the half marathon of it.
Man.
It's in May, so it's only a few months away.
Man.
Well, not really run walk. Mix.
Run walk. There's nothing wrong with run walk, my friend. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to jump over into a quick break. And then when we come back, I'm going to throw in the audio of myself and Justin talking about the trailer for Spiral from the Book of Saw, or Sawst. Every time he said it, I fucking died laughing. But we're going to talk about that. And then if Justin decides this weekend that he wants to sit down and record and talk about the Batman, you're going to hear Justin with an erection the size of the fucking Eiffel Tower in here talking about the goddamn bat suit. I looked at the pictures. I didn't even watch the footage. I looked at the pictures. I was like, okay, it's a bat suit.
In the pictures, you can't hardly see anything. It's red and black and dark, and you're just like, you got to kind of squint. And
you're like, I love, like, people are like cleaning it up and like doing color filters to remove all the coloration from it and look at it. And like, I'm like, it's a bat suit. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah. Show me some footage. Let me see what the movie, and then we'll.
Yeah.
We'll talk.
Which, you know, they're not even, they're just getting started with shooting the movie. You know, like, I mean, oh my God, this is the next 16 months of my life, Brad. The next 16 months of my life of Justin scraping, clawing and crawling and grabbing every little nugget of Batman news that he possibly can.
And we're going to enjoy following it with you the whole way.
Oh my God. So thank you very much, Brad, from the Cinema Guys. Again, I'll just get a burger. Both of those links for both of those shows will be down in the show notes. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We will be right back.
This is Epic Film Frog here, and I want to tell you, go fuck yourself. My piggy sucked 37 dicks.
We're clear.
You said the funniest thing when you were talking about the Predator. I said James Cameron and Stan Winston, and you said, I love James Winston.
Take us in.
Oh, yes. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are here to talk about Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Man, he just dropped us in cold. He didn't even count
at
all. I'm not even ready now.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Man. I didn't realize you needed me to count you in.
I just wasn't ready for it. I just wasn't.
I'm sorry.
That's my fault.
You should have just started us off. I don't know why you're giving me a show.
You need to do it. You need to do it.
Just, man. Here, just. There we go.
Oh, I'm goodness. Out.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Was that good? Like,
that sounded fine. I I'm so used to us counting. When you just went into it cold, I was like, what the fuck's happening?
Okay.
We always count.
All right.
He's even sober.
I was so confused.
Three. 2.
Hello, everyone. How are you? It's Monday evening. I'm ready to drink some beer. And get drunk on the Epic Motherfucking Film Guys, or should I call it Epic Motherfucking Frog Guys podcast? Yeah.
Can it be the live stream for Dan's wallet? No. Does your wallet have cancer?
He's texting a sexual partner that
he's probably on Grindr right now.
He's on Grindr all the fucking time, dude.
That's not true.
It totally is. You've been sitting on the couch watching a movie. I've looked over and you've been on Grindr. Or Tinder, whichever one, but I think you've been on Grindr more often.
Sauce, have you been eating those goddamn Russell Stover dinners again?
I have. I had one just the other night. It was delicious. So chocolatey, so rich, and the chocolate flavor. Because that's what Russell Stover's is, Justin. It's chocolate.
It's not. It's those microwavable dinners with like 600 milligrams of fucking sodium in it.
I eat very well. I eat fresh foods most of the time.
I eat A1 Loy steak sauce.
That's right.
You eat them all, right?
That's all I eat.
He tastes young and fresh. He's not tainted.
It's delicious. But sometimes it's like really salty if you get a man.
More dinner. Hold on.
He's you'll have to cut that. More sinister.
More sinister. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much. And normally we would save this kind of stuff for the Monday episode, but I'm going to cobble something else together for this coming Monday. But in the meantime, Justin, it's time to jump into a little thing that we love to call
Epic Previews.
In the world of Endicott, New York and Herndon, Virginia, two epic film guys dissect the latest movie trailers in a segment we like to call Epic Previews.
And as we discussed before, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about the teaser, basically it's a teaser anyway, about Spyro. That sounded like I said Spyro, like Spyro the Dragon, as if that was like a movie.
Right. Now, Spiral from the Book of Saw, or as I like to call it, Spiral, a Saw story. Very interesting idea behind the making of this movie. Now, Nick, you had seen the last installment of the Saw franchise Jigsaw, which was their last attempt at trying to revitalize a once very profitable and large horror franchise. And you were not too keen on that movie.
No, because it was marketed. They wanted everybody to be like, oh, like I had a really good trailer. Remember that? It used like a Johnny Cash song. And everybody was like, oh, this is going to be something, this big different thing. And the producers swore. They're like, oh, this is going to be totally different. And it was just another generic Saw sequel, another generic Jigsaw disciple. Like, just, can you not with this stuff anymore? And then you get this movie.
You want to play a game, motherfucker?
On the radar. And Chris Rock, I mean, again, is executive producing this and starring in the film. And this apparently was a big thing that he really wanted to do.
Yeah, like a pet project, man. Yeah. He was very passionate about it, which is interesting. But I understand, because as I was talking to you pre-show, Chris Rock is very aware of the African-American attachment to not only horror movies, but they love the Saw movies. Like, black people love the Saw movies more than white people. There's something about Jigsaw and his crazy torture porn that they just love to watch. And I think Chris Rock is like taking advantage of that. It's been a long time since we've seen him at the forefront of a movie in a starring role. That, and of course, Nick, he went and he grabbed out of his pocket of the best thing you can get, fan favorite Samuel L. Jackson to be a part of this movie as well. And the movie looks more like a Seven or one of your favorite movies of all time, Zodiac.
God, Nevin.
Than a Saw movie. It looks more like the mystery thriller that the first Saw was. So this is their second attempt at doing a reboot to the franchise. And Nick, strangely enough, even though I'm the horror guy on the Epic Film Guys, you're the Saw guy, because you're the one that went and saw almost all of them in the theater every opening night.
I think, I'm trying to think if I saw Seven in theaters or if I just waited. I think Six might have been where I finally stopped going to the theater to see them and checked out, and then saw Seven at home. But then, of course, yeah, I did go to see Jigsaw in the theater. I love the Saw series unabashedly. I watch it every single October. I love the first three films. The fourth film, because that's when you kind of start to bring in Costas Mandalore, who is god fucking awful. Like, you get Tobin Bell as Jigsaw, and Tobin Bell as Jigsaw is amazing, but then you're like, yeah, we gave him terminal cancer in the first movie, so eventually we have to kill this character off instead of being able to keep this character going without some ridiculous plot contrivances or long extended flashbacks, which are just like poison. You know, like Four, I enjoyed Four for what it was, because it was told at the same time, spoiler alert for a movie that's over 10 years old. The story happens at the exact same time as the story of Saw 3, which you don't find out until the end. And I loved the twist enough that it propels it over the finish line for me and just to a positive rating. But the director of this film, Justin, of Spiral from the Book of Saw, or A Saw Story, as you said, is Darren Lynn Bousman, who did direct the good Saw sequels, Saw 2, Saw 3, and, you know, depending on your mileage. Like,
dude,
me,
he
for
directed
me, for my
Repo:
part,
The Genetic War. Opera. He yeah. directed Tales of some Short on Tales of Halloween. So this guy, he knows his shit, dude. Yeah. He's directed a bunch of great horror.
He's
stuff.
Very, very well ingrained into this franchise, and you know he knows what makes a Saw movie work. You've got, from what it appears from the trailer anyway, some kind of a new angle on it. Now, I don't know if this is a reboot or anything. I don't think it's a reboot. I would think anyway, it still takes place in the same universe, even though they don't mention anything about Jigsaw or the Jigsaw Killer in the trailer. The fact that this is from the book of Saw leads me to believe that this is not a reboot, that this is in the same universe. So,
right.
Please, well, for the love of God, just don't have this person. If I see a flashback at the end of this fucking movie to Tobin Bell teaching another disciple about his jigsaw-y ways, I will burn everything down.
Well,
everything.
Myself, being the Saw novice that I am, I think that it's their way of doing like a half-assed reboot. They know that Jigsaw didn't make nearly as much money as they hoped.
If you
want to
make it one of those kind
of
deals where it's a sequel / reboot, like it's in continuity, but they're going to take it off and do its own thing.
Like a Halloween 2018, if you will.
That's wonderful. Do it. You know why? Here's why. This film's already going to be better than Saw 5, 6, and 7 and whatever, because Costas fucking Mandalore is not in them. I am not even kidding. He's a vacuum of charisma. Him being on screen, actually, you feel the soul being pulled from your body. You feel your life energy leaving you as you watch him attempt what can only very loosely be described as acting. He's horrible.
Can this movie bring torture porn back to the forefront of the horror genre? Because per the time frame when the first Saw was released, Nick, I can still remember the first time I watched it. I actually rented a VHS. Of Saw. They were still offering VHS at the time. I rented it. I watched it, and it blew me away, the horror fan that I was. And then from there on, I watched, you know, the first couple sequels.
It's amazing
in the theater.
To think, too, if you think about in just a horror sensibility, of course, as Loisos would say, our Lord and Savior James Wan directed the original Saw, and of course he wrote it, and it stars Lee Whannell, who has done amazing things in horror as well. So like these
two coming
guys,
on to he directed the upcoming The Invisible Man, yeah, which is coming out later this month,
I mean,
which we're all excited about.
You know, this is a franchise that has basically shaped modern horror as we know it, for better or worse, whatever you want to say about it, in a lot of different ways. So, you know, there's potential here. There's definite potential here. I'm really intrigued by the fact that Rock really, really wanted to do this project and really, really spearheaded being a part of it and bringing this franchise back. I'm thrilled with the inclusion of Darren Lynn Bousman. I think it's all very, very promising to me. It's all very, very promising. And I'm someone who, like I said, I love this franchise. Shitty installments aside, because they're bad. They're real bad. But when this franchise was good, like it was good, good. And I really, really want to see that through line continued through. Like, you know what? Do a continuity thing and just ignore everything after Saw 4 for this movie. I'm fine with that. If you want to pretend that Costas Mandalore didn't exist, even though he's in Saw 4, if you want to pretend he didn't fucking exist. Perfect. Perfect.
What I love about this movie is that the Saw movies are known for an October release. They're releasing this thing in May. It came out of nowhere. We had heard
in the middle of blockbuster season.
Yeah, dude. We heard rumors that Chris Rock was interested in being a part of one of these, yet we never heard any official confirmation. Then randomly out of nowhere, a trailer lands with a very strange poster, which is Chris Rock's character standing in the middle of a crosswalk. And then on the stoplight, you see Jigsaw's logo as the red light. And I mean, to me, I love how cryptic they're being with this movie. It
I
looks
love,
like they're
you
really
hear
trying
that classic
to add
Saw theme all throughout the trailer. Like, you hear that Saw music, which is just one of,
and it's a good trailer,
the best
I
themes
mean
in modern horror. It's just, I mean,
it got people's attention, dude. Yeah. It was trending for like 2 days on Twitter and on social media.
I'm excited.
You got people's attention. I know Jigsaw didn't do that shit. All you did was put the fucking doll on the poster and write Jigsaw on it, and everyone's like, yeah, I get
Jigsaw
it.
Had
I've
a good trailer.
Movies.
It had that, you know, trailer with the Johnny
it
Cash
was
song.
Good,
and
but
it had a
I'm
good trailer.
Saying,
but then, you know, like
this
you
has
said,
got some hype, man. This has got some hype because
I just don't want to see, like, I don't even care if you somehow put Tobin Bell in this movie somehow, whatever, but please, for the love of
Motherfucker's still doing conventions, so he's still around, man.
If the killer is another disciple of Jigsaw, I'm going to find Loisos, and I'm going to smack him in the dick. Right on the head, just full open hand smack, just going to bring it right down, and just, that's it. Because it'll be his fault somehow. I don't even know.
I'm sure we'll find a reason why it would be
his fault. I want to see Kid get strangled.
You know what? I think a kid might get killed in the movie.
If it's this movie, it's going to be way worse than the strangulation, though.
Yeah, but that's it. That's it for Epic Previews. That's that trailer. Ladies and gentlemen, nothing else major landed a trailer release, but I can tell you that myself and Nick are extremely excited for this weekend upon this recording day.
Oh my God.
Because we are going to see Sonic the Hedgehog
in
theaters.
I'm so excited. And I can't wait.
I've been preparing by watching all of the press that Jim Carrey's been doing for this. And I posted an interview or two in the Hopester's Dumpster, our fan group on Facebook. And he is back in top form, 90s Jim Carrey form. He's having a blast. He's loving being a part of such a big movie. And I think it's going to be a big hit. I have a great feeling it's going to be a big hit. And I'm hoping it's going to be the Jim Carrey renaissance where he comes back out and we get Jim Carrey comedies again. Like, you know, I like comedies as much as you do, but you're more of a fan of the modern stuff than I am. I miss the days where you had those comedy actors like Jim Carrey, where you, no matter what the movie was, you knew you were going to see it because it was a Jim Carrey comedy. Oh, yeah. Fill in the blank comedy, and you knew that it was always going to be at least somewhat enjoyable, and that's just not the case anymore. As much as I love the dick jokes and the dick talk and the cocksucking motherfuckers on this show, I don't like that kind
of
stuff
that's a lot
in
of
my comedy movies. So I'm hoping that this is a Jim Carrey comeback, and I really want Sonic to be good. I'm so excited to see it. That blue hedgehog, that motherfucker.
No, I'm pumped. I just, you know, it's a Sonic the Hedgehog movie. They don't have to do a whole lot of heavy lifting. They just have to make it entertaining and fun. And I am all on board for seeing some Jim Carrey doing his Jim Carrey thing.
His 90s Jim Carrey thing.
I cannot wait for that reason and that reason alone. Like I said, this movie is not going to have to do a whole hell of a lot. It just has to be an entertaining watch. I'm seeing it opening night. I can't wait.
Oh, God. Nick is seeing Sonic the Hedgehog opening night.
That's right, baby. I'm going to curl up into a little ball, and I'm going to fucking zoom right into that theater. Yeah. I'm going to get my rings and sit in the seat and finger my asshole. Ladies and gentlemen, we are so we are so needlessly vulgar. I swear to Christ. But then sometimes I think that we're too vulgar. But then I listen to episodes of The Countdown and I hear Wayne. And I'm like, okay, it's not that bad. Because sometimes
we could listen to episodes from like 3 years ago or 4 years ago.
Man, it was bad in the early days.
Yeah. Ooh.
I think we've matured. We've matured,
we have.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We've matured as adults.
The blood from the penis and put the balls in his mouth.
Like we've matured as adults. And I'm also shocked that we ever gained a following, considering the kind of nonsense that came out of our mouths. We had that overly dramatically homosexual character, the Lisp, which I don't even know where that came from. And then we had that drunk bum piece of shit that used to come on the show every episode and harass everybody. And apparently, Nick, people want that piece of shit to come back on the show.
Hey.
And they're hoping that you eventually replace me with him.
Why does he want you to get me drunk right now?
I mean, they want you to review movies with him. That means you have to find a way to get him to the movies. I don't know how that's even possible, but...
Fuck the Epic Film Guys.
We've come a long way. Let's just say that.
Oh, my God. Ladies and gentlemen, you guys are absolutely amazing. Absolutely love you. Thank you so much for supporting the show.
I look like shit and I smell like shit and the urine I've been pissing on myself for 10 years.
I think our peak vulgarity was when the Hobster talked about cutting off and eating a piece of his own dick.
I forgot what it was all about. I think he was telling me about it, that he was so hungry. Or something, he was so drunk and he was too drunk to go back into the restaurant to get food or something? Or
I don't know. And that is it, ladies and gentlemen. That's going to do it for another Monday episode here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. Justin, his erection was probably much too large, so he was never able to get here to talk about the bat suit. But unfortunately, no, he's had some things come up this weekend and different things like that, which he may or may not talk about next time we record. So regardless, we love you all. Thank you so, so much, everybody out there, for listening. You guys are absolutely amazing. For myself, for Justin, and for the God of Podcasting, our very own Loy Sauce. Thank you so, so much, everybody out there, for listening. Until next time, we will see you at the movies. This episode is brought to you by the Epic Film Guys patrons, our amazing producers and executive producers who pay us to do the show that we love to do. So a huge, huge shout out to Alan Gallerisi, Brandon Frederick, Caleb Brownlee,
Dan Brennick, John DeQuilla, Julio Oliveira,
Deborah Kinney, Chip Moore, Chris Maltesos,
Rob Trevino, Ken Maney, Brady Cloven,
Justin Winters, Scott LeVar, The Running Man, The Flash, Paul Prezula, and Gerald Morris. And a very special thank you to our top level patrons, our executive producers on the show:
Chris Yaney, Robert Moreno, our resident kaiju expert,
Bill Sutton, and Destruction in Human Form, Jared Taylor. Thank you all so, so much, and we'll see you
at the movies.